Hey guys, this is the Brothers Whiffs number 43. Believe it or not, I can't believe we've actually made it this far, and it not taking us 10 years. Staying on track, unbelievably so. So today we've got, or tonight for Thomas, because it's 1 a.m. for him, we've got Thomas Kernek all the way from Slovakia.
Hello, everybody.
And then today, the beautiful, the blue, Justin Miller. You have to
Excellent,
say words.
Ubiquity shirt.
You have to talk so people recognize your voice. There you go.
Blue shirt.
The blue shirt. Yeah. And no, he's not unhealthy. He's just been losing weight. So
yes.
Nobody worry about him. So
like 50 pounds since November. So
since November? Jeez, yeah. Dude. Was that like 10 pounds a month?
210 to 159.
Rock and roll, man. What's your target? What are you heading towards?
150.
All right, well, you're practically there, man.
Yeah, man.
That's crazy.
I can hear you now.
Oh my God, are you joining, Tom?
I can barely hear you.
All right, so
okay, I'm going. Bye.
Bye.
No, hold on. Okay. How's it going?
Pretty well, Tom. Can you hear us?
That's good. What are you all talking about?
Networking stuff.
You, obviously. Your ears are burning, huh?
No, we were just, we're in the cobblestone, and we're having some good fun.
That's good.
Okay, here, I'll go. I know, I'm obviously you're talking. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks, Tom. So it's apparently still St. Patrick's Day. In Ireland, it runs from, what is it, February 17th all the way through February 16th of the next year. It just kind of keeps going. So he'll be drinking every day until it comes back around. So anyway, let's kind of jump right in. There was a chunk of stuff. We'll kind of cover that at the end. So let's see. Mike put in the notes. Or I guess I should say he put it on Facebook and I stuck it in the notes, that if you are running the Cambium CN Pilots and you're running 4.3 or older, you should upgrade because there's, I think a vulnerability or an exploit. So you can jump in on that. Air Max Gen 2 equipment. He's got a little bit of that up there. So that's Air Max AC Gen 2. And I'm not sure what new and interesting, exciting developments there are on AC Gen 2. Do you guys have any more on that? I know there's something I thought was super interesting is they've released the ISO Station AC and the Prism Station AC, and I think those are horns. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, they look a lot like those other horns.
Yeah, they look awfully similar to the RF element horns. Have you seen these, Thomas?
Yeah, it's I wonder if there will be some you know, vendor legal battles going over these or not.
I think imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, so RF elements should just say, oh, thanks guys, and call it a day, right? Is that how that works?
Is that how it works? Okay,
I'm
then.
Pretty sure that's how
it works. Thanks for not making it red.
Yeah. I mean, we could always get one.
At least they are black and white, not red and white, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
They got this, like, smoke glass on the edge of them, on the edge of them, too, at the front. They kind of look like cameras.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Infinite mirror cameras in the inside.
I really like it how there was somebody on Facebook that did like a comparison between the marketing website of Ubiquity for these and RF elements, and it's like even the marketing materials are let's just say very curiously similar.
Interesting. Yeah, I saw a couple of comparisons and they are very close, at least in initial appearance. I mean, who's to say that the engineering is equal of the two, one being better than the other? But they look very similar. I remember somebody on the forums was saying something about why would they release a second gen of AC gear? And I'm assuming this is probably going to add some some features that were missing, like maybe the MooMIMO stuff, because I don't think that was in their initial release, right? Maybe some of that will show up in here or something.
Oh, the only thing I've seen with MooMIMO from Ubiquiti is the Unify HD that just came out. Their new premium top of the line access point as MooMIMO.
MooMIMO, and somebody can correct me on this, but MooMIMO shouldn't actually be well suited for antennas like the Horns themselves, right? Because with the Horn antenna profile and how the Horn antennas even works, you know, you actually wouldn't get almost any, I don't want to say any at all, but almost any advantage to MooMIMO because of how the propagation works and what the use case for these antennas even is.
If I'm wrong, because I think also MooMIMO was basically an access point can send to multiple clients simultaneously, right?
Yes, it's an access point technology, these other ones here, the ISO station and the Prism station is the key word there.
Yeah, those are going to be clients.
There's your CPEs.
Okay, so yeah, there you can see my knowledge of Ubiquiti right there.
Yeah, they have a light beam AC. It's sort of, what do you call that, panel? Panel sort of style dish.
Looks like a dish some sort.
Actually, that's also interesting. But so all of these devices that come with the Ubiquiti Horns are actually clients, then, right?
Yeah,
that's what they're.
Or
showing.
I guess you could use the light beams probably as point to point links, or any of these as point to point. But essentially, you'd have a some kind of access point that you would go to, like a sector or something.
Yeah,
that's actually also quite interesting because the beam, the Horns actually have quite wide beamwidth. Like the Horns are not, you know, your pinpoint precision antennas that you would normally want to use on the CPE on the client side of a wireless system.
Yeah. Now, so on the Mimosa side, the A5Cs, a lot of people are using the Horns on those because you have two of them. And they're getting good results out of that stuff.
Yeah, I also see the Rocket Prism AC, the 5AC Gen 2 on there. I think JJ was saying he tossed up some of these prisms. And I think he said it wasn't the silver bullet he was hoping it would be, but it was better. So I guess take that for what it's worth. Good old JJ getting that stuff ahead of everybody else.
Was that JJ?
I think it was JJ. I think
who's that guy?
This guy we used to know. Australian, sing a song.
See, and this is where we confuse all of our new podcast listeners.
Yeah, JJ's a character, super smart guy, too smart to talk to us anymore, and then he's been coming back around. No, he's just been crazy busy and had his head down, so I can't blame him. I've had my head down a lot too, so I haven't been as active in the Slack as I ought to be. You guys have anything else interesting to talk about the Air Max stuff?
So I'm actually kind of still wondering why they would choose to go with the Horns for the client side. I mean, that to me seems like quite an odd decision. I mean, I understand that you still get the bonuses of noise rejection and all of that.
Yeah, I was going to say noise rejection like around them, right? So maybe it would help them in maybe
here's Mike to straighten us out here. He'll straighten us out. Mike. Yeah,
we're talking about the Air Max AC Gen 2 stuff and why they chose to do the horn style antenna on the client side.
On the stations.
I have no clue.
You're dead to me.
They're like in the documentation I've seen, it looks like they intend it to be the access point side. They just chose the name station for some unknown reason.
Huh.
You know, station in the name, to me, implies that it's the client side of the equation.
Yeah, that's what that's the assumption we were operating under.
But
even if it was an access point, and this is, you know, going back to what we started with the horn type antenna and with how it propagates and what it's used for, and we were mentioning this in relationship to MooMIMO, you wouldn't actually get the benefit of MooMIMO using it on a horn style antenna.
Right. Yeah. No. It's just gonna be, you know, dumb antenna. It's not gonna be anything smart. They are going to have, I think, like four different beam widths from 45 all the way up to 90.
Oh, it's 30 to 90. I'm looking at the site now.
Okay, 30 to 90. And then 90, then 60 and 90 are asymmetrical horns. They didn't have any at the show for me to see what that looked like. I wonder if that's because, like, if you look at the RF Elements ones, they're 90-degree horns. You know, they're 90 degrees up and down. That's, most of that's just wasted. So maybe Ubiquiti's found a way to use the horn technology. Maybe they've used the horn technology and
tighten it up a bit.
Put some stuff on it to get it kind of.
Did you have the wherewithal to ask them, hey, this design looks awfully familiar?
I did ask them about that, and I said something like, I think I've seen this built-in 2.4 gigahertz client, you know, local client access thing before too. What's going on here? And they said, and I'm severely paraphrasing, but it's kind of like something along the lines of, well, you know, plenty of people have stolen our good ideas, so. You know, here you go.
Tit for tat sort of thing. But
you know, on the antenna side, you know, horns, you know, those have been around for 70 years. So a horn antenna is nothing special or, you know, new. It's just new again.
The new hotness. I got you. That makes sense. Let's see. What else? Miller, you mentioned that, Ubiquiti's putting out a new Unify access point, right?
Yeah, there's a new Unify HD multi-user MIMO.
Yes.
$300 for it.
I want to say that TP-Link just announced that they're releasing a new EAP access point that competes directly with that Ubiquiti Pro one, and I think it even uses the exact same chipset and pretty close to the same antenna design. So the only thing is MSRP is like $10 less than the Ubiquiti stuff. And it,
yeah, this is 4x4 MIMO. So in very high dense installations, it would be supposedly better suited.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it. I want to play with them. Maybe once a couple of firmware versions come out, I'll pop one in. And
I want one for my house.
It sounds solid. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've actually, I've got a couple of the, I've got one TP-Link now, one of those controller based, and I'm getting another one to test their new one that they're putting out. And I've got a pizza joint. I'm going to stick one in and then maybe another restaurant to stick the other one. I figured that'd be a pretty decent test environment. It's a lot of just crap and it's weird. They get a lot of surging traffic and stuff. So a lot of college students will pop into like, the restaurant and just sit there and just hammer on it for a while. So should be a good environment for you to at least play around with, see how it does.
I thought I was going to get a chance to work with a couple of them. They, you know, somebody knows somebody that knows somebody. So I got, kind of drug into, volunteering some of my time and expertise at a school,
Mike's network just crashed.
No. You must not be running off the new Ubiquiti stuff. Anyway, let's keep trucking. We've got the... next on the list is the UBNT, the Ubiquiti exploit on devices performing NAT. That's an interesting one. I haven't been able to find just a ton of detail on it. Some of what I have seen is it appears as if it has to be going through... a device that's routing or NATing. I think NATing, though. It looks like it has to be an affected device that's NATing. Apparently, there's a bug in the PHP implementation they've chosen to use. It says, thanks to a 20-year-old PHP build. So it's fairly old. It was disclosed. It was properly disclosed over to Ubiquiti. They ended up, I guess, not repairing it and putting out an update in time, so that information's dropped. It says... a command injection vulnerability found in pingtest_action.cgi. So from the way this thing reads, it sounds like somebody can just click a specially crafted link and it does the exploit on their device. I'm not exactly sure. There's a video showing sort of how it works. It's fairly light on detail. I'd be curious. I would want to know more on how it works. So I'm just wondering if in MicroTik you could do like a layer 7 inspection to block however it is they're attacking it. Not to say it would be effective, and it would probably murder your router if you tried to do it, but just, you know, curiosity.
I like it how you suggested using a MicroTik to fix a Ubiquiti exploit.
Well, most people that are running Ubiquiti networks have MicroTik at the edge, so it seems fairly likely that they're going to have that sitting right there at the border ready. What do you guys think about this? Any opinions?
I believe, if I remember the time frames on when things were happening with this notification and subsequent dropping of the ball by Ubiquiti, it seems to kind of match up with when somebody dear to the company left, and perhaps that person was the one that was doing it, and no one thought, hey, you know, we need to reassign someone to, you know, monitor this website.
Gotcha. And
so, obviously they dropped the ball, but I think it was somebody, you know, left the company and
gotcha.
No one took it over.
So not necessarily malicious, just that they lost an employee that was responsible for this kind of thing, and they haven't been able to sort of pick up the slack since.
Yeah, I think they just didn't even think about it until it went public, and then it was, you know, oh crap, you know, what is this website? Log in. Oh, hey, look at here.
That sucks.
So actually, it's kind of interesting because Ubiquiti has been downplaying this, saying this is actually just a privilege evaluation exploit. But from everything that I've seen and looked through, this actually seems like a remote code execution exploit rather than just privilege escalation. And also, to me, it's actually interesting that you know, there are still a ton of conflicting reports on this since the exploit has not been completely publicized yet. And but yes, it will be interesting to actually see the code and see how it really is executed to finally know all of the details.
Yeah.
The only problem, of course, is that currently there is not a fix out there yet, so who knows?
Yeah, and
well,
does it...
this says that Ubiquiti finally got back to the register and said that they resolved the issue for 37 out of the 44 products mentioned by the consultant, and that they're going to release the rest very soon. So.
All right, so there should be an active update. Or is it just recently released since this article went live? What does it say?
I don't think it has been released yet.
It doesn't. There's no time frame on when this update was added either. They didn't put a time on here.
I've dropped out a couple of times. Is this still on the PHP exploit?
Yeah. Miller was saying that somewhere in the notes it states that Ubiquiti's fixed it for 37 of the roughly 40. Affected devices that
I think it was 8.0.1 already included the fix before this even went public. Like they were already fixed it. It's just they didn't know that it had been complained about. You know, they just found it through some other means, I guess. But then they've pushed out a few other updates since then for affected products.
Okay. Well, maybe it's not as big a deal as people think.
Although, this one says that you have to have someone log in and then trick them into clicking a malicious link to get it.
Yeah, that's what I meant. There is conflicting reports currently, if it's privilege escalation or whether it's remote code execution. And so we can see...
Well, it's remote code execution, but it's not without authentication first. It's not an unprivileged escalation, remote code escalation.
Yeah, there's still conflicting reports about all of this, and we can see here how this is not correctly handled by PR.
presumably, if you had console or access to it, you could just turn on SSH and get into it. You know.
Presumably, there's this. a lot of
unless there's something else. You know, it's a different shell or something. Who knows? But
yet, I think it is. Trying to remember what my version of it is. I believe it's if a read-only user executes this link, then they get escalated into root privilege. But yeah, you have it. There's a whole series of things that have to happen to make this, you know, exploit be used. And it's not like it's a drive-by thing anybody could do.
See, the problem is that none of this is actually confirmed reports, because there is conflicting, you know, reports from different sources. So, and since there has not been any public, statement about this from Ubiquiti yet, nobody really knows what it is and what it does, since the exploit itself has not been publicly released yet either. So all we can do is speculate for now.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that what we do anyway?
Yeah, for sure. So while we're on the subject of exploits, let's talk about the mother of all exploits that was dropped about a week ago, something like that. Maybe last week. No. Yeah. No? I can't remember. Maybe a week and a half ago, something like that. It was the CIA Vault 7 stuff that was dropped on WikiLeaks. And it's somewhere around 8,000 documents describing a lot of the cyber arsenal that CIA has. A lot of, I guess, zero-day exploits for different, things all the way from smart TVs to Android phones to iPhones to our known and loved MikroTiks. Some of the, I think the MikroTik exploit was called Hive, whatever application or program or code name for that particular one was, and it actually hit on an HTTP vulnerability built into the server. So if you're going to administer the MikroTik via HTTP, you know, just regular port 80, that web server was apparently vulnerable. And you guys can totally correct me because I'm kind of paraphrasing some of the stuff that I read. For what I understand is, as if it was open to the internet using this toolkit, they would be able to actually exploit and upload a blob to your MikroTik having no credentials whatsoever. They could, in effect, install a package that wasn't like a proxying package or something like that, where it would...
The shell. It's a shell exploit. They get BusyBox shell on there.
There was actually multiple exploits in there, and some of them were more documented than the others. And the main one, the semi-red one, was the one which could exploit HTTP to deliver arbitrary payloads and arbitrary remote code execution. Of course, this would not work with the default configuration on the MikroTik because there is a firewall. So specifically, firewall had to be disabled. But yeah, it's interesting stuff, and actually I went through all of the pages that I could find in the Vault 7 regarding MikroTik, and there were actually multiple tools mentioned, and not all of them were fully there. So I know that MikroTik mentioned that they contacted WikiLeaks to get the full code sample and all of that. So maybe we will still see some more results of this being slowly fixed in RouterOS as time goes on.
Yeah, I think within a day or two, something like that, MikroTik put out a patch, and the patch said that they fixed an HTTP vulnerability. They didn't specifically say, at least I don't think they did, that it was trying to plug this Hive hole, the HTTP specific one.
They also put a scanner in, so it scans the file system and removes any unknown files. So. Nice. Presumably, MikroTik knows what should be installed on a MikroTik, so when you install it,
it's going to check to find anything.
It should be there. Yeah.
Gotcha. So that was 6.38.5 that they put that fix in, or if you're doing bug fix only, that's 6.37.5. Had those updates. But pretty interesting. I mean, that's... Because some of the stuff I thought was one codenamed Weeping Angel, I think, where if you had a smart television, it would... basically take it over, and it would make it appear as if the TV was turned off, but it was recording audio and sending that back to CIA servers, which I thought was super brilliant, right? Weeping angels like a Doctor Who, so whenever you're not looking at them, they come alive. And
don't blink.
Yeah, right? And they try and kill you. I thought that was pretty brilliant. And then I don't think anybody was surprised that they had Android exploits, for sure. And I really don't think anybody was surprised that they had iPhone exploits either.
Well, the way they bitch about not being able to get into iPhones, you'd think they, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of times it's the FBI and stuff that's bitching about not being able to get into iPhones. And it's not like the CIA is going to say, hey, let me help you out with that.
Shh, I got this. Just plug it in right here.
Shh. Oh, no, girl, it'll be okay. I don't think that's happening. They don't want to let the cat out of the bag. But yeah,
got your exploits right here.
I saw somebody post up something about, hey, here's a website that will help you determine if you've been exploited by the Vault 7 stuff. And somebody said, or you know, if you're vulnerable to it. And somebody said, are you on the internet? Then yes, you are vulnerable.
Yeah,
which is fairly accurate. I can't think of a better way to describe of, are you vulnerable to something? Absolutely. I'm connected to the internet. Yeah. You guys have any other thoughts on the Vault 7 stuff? I wonder who leaked all that.
My thought is that it's a good thing that Mr. Smith isn't here, because this podcast would go to 3 hours long.
Oh, geez. I'm sure he's going to want to go on about it later, which is fine. It's fine. It's a really interesting topic. I'm just curious if whoever leaked this, you got to wonder if it's going to come back on them at some point. And
I just heard today that one of the government agencies lost an encrypted laptop. It was left in a car and someone stole it.
So actually, it's again, there's tons of analysis on the internet about all of this. But from what I've seen and from what I've read, it actually has to do with how cyber warfare is classified by the government. And basically, since you have to have public command and control servers, and you have to, you know, the data that you extract from your targets has to be transferred over the public internet, all of the tools are actually not classified. So all of this is actually not classified by law, and therefore, actually, if you can obtain a copy, you are within your right to actually distribute that copy. I mean, it's not as simple as this, of course, and if anybody is interested, I urge you to go and look up all of the analysis and the articles on this, but it specifically said that, you know, for something to be classified as top secret by the U.S. government, according to the current laws, and since there are laws around software and about digital information are so complicated and, you know, out of date. Basically, if you wanted to classify all of this as top secret, then you would actually, it would not be able to traverse the public internet. And since this data by its nature has to be able to traverse the public internet, it cannot be classified top secret, and therefore, there is just a lot of debate about how all of this can even play out on the legal level. If you even find somebody who leaked it, you know, how do you punish them, since this is technically, you know, not under the protection of those, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm sure the CIA could find some way to punish them.
Oh yes, I'm sure there will be ways, but it actually sparked a lot of interesting debate and a lot of interesting analysis on how these cyber weapons are even classified and.
That's interesting.
All of that.
You know, I was talking to a guy at Nanog. He was a pretty interesting cat. He worked for some organization that did a whole lot of, you know, DOD top secret work. And he was saying that, you know, whenever this stuff gets leaked out on the internet or becomes public in any form or fashion, he literally cannot read it. You know, even though it's out in the public, the fact that he knows that it's top secret information and maybe some of the stuff that he's even worked with or worked on, he has to avoid all of it. Like if he sees it on the news, he has to turn it off. He can't talk to anybody about it. He can't read it in the paper, you know, because he's afraid he might somehow get found out that he was reading this. You know, I mean, I guess it's a legitimate concern for him because, you know, there's associated jail time and things like that with it. And it's crazy. It's like everybody in the world could know about it, but he can't acknowledge that it exists.
How old was this trove of information? I got the feeling that it was like 2015.
There was some stuff from the middle of 2016 in there. I think that was the latest that was in there.
So presumably they could have already moved past these particular exploits and have new ones.
Right, yeah.
Maybe so. I remember listening to Security Now on one of their podcasts, and they were saying that there was some other toolkits that were, this was a while back, that had gotten leaked, and some of the exploits were, I think, three years old for the Cisco ASAs, and they were still valid and working.
Valid, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just...
People have to update their stuff, you know?
Yeah, you gotta stay on top of that. Well, I mean, if Cisco doesn't know that there's this exploit, then, you know, they may not necessarily fix it, so even updating's not... You know what I mean? If it's 0 a day, right? Nobody knows about it except for the folks that found it, so it is what it is.
No, I mean, if you look at the history of ridiculously stupid, you know, backdoors and hard set credentials in certain vendors and, you know, on purpose broken encryption algorithms and now all of this, it's, yeah, you have to keep really good tabs on your equipment and, yeah, just everything, you know, security is always a concern.
As a user of Microtech, it's really hard to know whether or not you've been compromised because it's not like you have access to the file system on a level that allows you to make that determination, unlike Windows or Linux or something else. So,
I mean, as long as you have firewall, which I'm sorry, if anybody listening to this doesn't have input chain firewalling on their Microtechs, then, you know, that's just plain old your fault.
Yeah, but doesn't that disable FastPath? And we've got to have it.
You know, I'm with Tom on this one. Just buy bigger routers.
True story. Yeah.
I think Tom's post count on the Microtech forum was 60 on an account he's had many, many years. I mean, I'm thinking at least a decade.
So he's a lurker.
Yeah, he's a taker, well, not a giver.
He hates forums, apparently. And I wouldn't be surprised if his post count now was well over 80 just in the past week.
Unprecedented. All right. So while we're talking about Microtech, let's keep trucking in that vein. They fixed a CCR IPsec packet reordering issue on the 12th of this month. What is it? Version 6, 39, RC51. Alex has been harping on this one for five ever. He ran into this on his CCRs trying to do throughput tests. I can't remember his exact configurations, but he even had a lab set up where he could reproduce this through a lot of pain and anguish. He found out that with certain security configurations. I think, because doesn't the CCR do hardware encryption on some certain profiles or policies? And whenever you kicked in the hardware encryption, it was actually reordering some of the packets, which severely lowered your throughput. And took him a while to get through to Microtech. But then once he did, it still took a little while of him bothering the hell out of him. But they responded, and I know this was all down to him too. So they are listening. For all you people sending in support tickets, I don't know that it is. Have you guys seen anybody testing to confirm? Because they also said that they accelerated it greatly on the CCR, not just fixing this issue, but accelerated performance. I think I saw something on Reddit where somebody said
there's been posts on Reddit and on forums that people claim that now you can actually do 850 megabits per single TCP stream, which goes over IPsec. So there's been multiple reports that the fix actually does what it's supposed to do for multiple people.
Rock and roll. But then again, it's a release candidate, so I don't know that I would necessarily throw that into production unless you absolutely had to. Let's see. Microtech MUM got announced for the U.S. Denver, Colorado, May 25th through 26th. You're going to be there, right, Thomas?
Yes, I will be there.
You're going to have a Unimus booth, I assume, right?
Oh, yes.
Excellent.
So there's actually a European MUM in Venice next week, and I will be on that one as well. And then, yeah, we have the one in the US in May.
Rock and roll. That one's going to be way cooler. From what I understand, at that European MOM, there's going to be the largest volume of announcements that we've seen as far as hardware goes. I'm sure if somebody was studious enough, they could find a post somewhere that shows somebody disassembled a MikroTik package and found a whole lot of new code names for equipment, or I guess not code names, model numbers. So you could sort of maybe figure out what some of that is. I'm not going to tell you where that is. That takes all the fun out of it. I don't want to steal MikroTik's thunder.
To me, what is knowing what they are before they announce it really do for you?
Nothing. Because I still want to know how much it costs.
Cost and when's it going to be in my hand?
Right, yeah. Just because you announce it doesn't mean it's going to be hitting the distribution chain anytime soon. So, yeah.
And I don't want to bash on MikroTik, but we know how in the past their ETAs for hardware have been, so
it could be tricky.
But they're not the worst in the space.
Oh, they are not. Yes,
no. At least historically.
And it seems actually they've been improving recently as well. So.
A little bit better all the time, man. That's all you can ask for, right? So you're gonna be there, Thomas. I think I'm gonna be there. Are you gonna be there, Miller?
I was talking, and it seems like Dave would do this MOM. So this might go, and my work booth. If not, then I'll probably end up going under Skywire.
Rock and roll.
Good chance. There's a good chance. We want to bring my coworker Adam with us this time and have him do some training and stuff like that.
Very cool. I think I'm going to end up going. I'm fairly certain I'll end up being there.
Seems like the one. I think didn't JJ say he was going to?
JJ said he is definitely going.
Yeah.
Unprecedented. How about you, Mike? I know you've been hitting a lot of shows lately.
Probably not.
All right. I figured you were going to bail on that one, if anything.
Yeah, well, it's like the WISPA shows are far more useful to me.
Yeah.
And the vast majority of the reason why I would go would be to hang out with you guys. And not that I don't want to, but there's only so much money and there's so much work to do, so.
Fair enough. I think Alex is my. I think Alex said he might be going to this one as well.
Yeah.
Yet, looking through the summary in our chat here, Alex is a maybe. Thrift is boycotting. Cox is a maybe. JJ is a yes. Miller is a maybe. You think?
Yeah.
Justin. Wilson says he's going. Kurnack, yes, and Smith, no. I just wish that MikroTik would have an official presence at the WISPA shows. I'll probably bring that up every show until they do, I guess.
Speaking of shows, Andrew Cox suggested that we start our own Brothers WISP conference. Just curious, I'm curious how that would go down. I mean, it sounds like it would be a lot of fun. And I'm sure we'd structure it quite differently than most shows, but I don't know if we'd get any attendance. I don't know how many people are going to show up to that.
Family would show up.
My mom's going to watch.
It would be a friends and family show.
Mom would show up, yeah. Honey, I support you.
No, I could see it being cool. I'd like panels, right? I think it's one thing the mom doesn't have is they don't have any panels, right, where you can have sort of some discussions and things like that, and I thought Nanog was a lot the same too. It was good. There's a lot of really interesting high level stuff that I will never do as long as I live, just because I'm not that big, I'm not that volume, right? I'm not a Facebook or a Google, and I don't have Google level problems. Not to say that at some point that stuff won't get easier and more mainstream, but I don't know. Anyway, that's way down in the weeds. There's no sense in going too crazy on that. I just thought it was an interesting idea because it would actually probably be a lot of fun.
It would be a tremendous amount of work. It'd be fun, but I about get tapped out just trying to record a dozen interviews during a week-long show.
It's hard, dude. Doing that kind of stuff, you have to be on. You know what I mean? You have to like try and stay present, do all that stuff. It's a lot of work. It kind of taxes you. So speaking of conferences and things like that, Wisp America was in Memphis. I actually lived there for a little while, and man, I was sure disappointed I didn't get to go. But I had a good group of guys go in my stead, so it ended up being Hammy here went, Miller went, Justin went. Anybody else?
That's it for our group.
Okay. Yeah. And I see, so I've already got in the list, and that way you guys don't have to hunt for them. Mike did a tremendous amount of interviews. He ended up, and I'm just going to kind of read through the list really quick, and then he can go over the highlights there. But he went through all the WISP award winners. He went through and interviewed Packet Flux, Baltic, Siklu, Micronet Communications, Mimosa, Ubiquity, one just on Unify updates, SIAE, and that's pronounced SI. How do you pronounce that, Mike?
C-I.
C-I. C-I. C-I. Also, McCowntech, IgniteNet, and Visp did an interview as well. And one thing before I forget to say it is they didn't allow recording of sessions. A lot of people were saying that really would have been nice. You know, they weren't able to get to the show. So on behalf of Mike, maybe drop the WISPA guys an email letting them know how you'd be interested or not interested one way or the other in that. I know he was beating that to death. It's his new SFP high horse. So you can ride that as long as you want. But what did you guys see, think, feel, smell, taste? What was good about the show?
Well, the Air Max video is missing from your list. Just an FYI.
All right, I'll put that in there.
Maybe it didn't actually go public. So maybe it's my fault. I'm checking now. But yeah, feel free to keep chatting, Wally.
So I didn't really get a chance to go and talk to a lot of people, but I talked to the IgniteNet guys. They have a lot of 2.5 gig copper Ethernet interfaces coming out on their radios and stuff, which I thought was really interesting. I was wondering when we might see 2.5 gig interfaces on Microtech and Ubiquity and everything else.
And they also have some 2.5 gig SFPs as well.
Right. Which, if you're doing SFP Plus, I don't know why you would even bother doing anything but 10 gig.
Well, so. I didn't understand why until I realized what else is a 2.5 gig SFP. GPON.
They're going from a radio?
Using 60 gig to feed a GPON node.
So you're saying it would go straight from the radio right into... Right into
I can see that with some of the hardware that they had there on the desk.
That still seems odd to me because I would think that there's far more SFP pluses being produced out there than the 2.5 gig stuff. So economies of scale, I would think it would be far less expensive to just pull some off-the-shelf components then.
Well, like,
not to say 2.5 isn't, but...
Well, like, their intent isn't to be a cost-effective port into a router. I mean, you have a GPON port, it's because you're feeding a GPON plant. So you use that, and then you build out your apartment building with GPON instead of with Cat5 or DSL or, you know, Ethernet over coax, you do GPON, and instead of having a rack-mounted OLT and all that other stuff, it's just an SFP in the radio. And then you go and you do that at each apartment building in the complex.
So you're saying this... I thought the OLT had some intelligence built in, right? Because it's doing TDM, it's doing time division multiplex, so all of the clients, right? It takes one fiber strand in effect, right? And it splits that out to some number of clients, like 16 or 32, you know, I mean, upwards 100 plus, right? So say it's 32. If you're splitting that amongst 32, you actually have to do the TDM. You have to know when those time slices are. So is this radio going to be intelligent enough to do that? I thought that was really the claim to fame of an OLT. You just go straight into the OLT and it does all the heavy lifting. It has that intelligence.
I mean, maybe I'm reading something into what's not there, but I mean, that seems to me like the most useful application for that is an apartment complex, 60, you know, you bring your service into the middle, 60 gig distribute to all the units, and then, you know, fiber to the unit.
Gotcha.
The other thing I picked up from them was they have like this, it's like a 5-port or 4-port switch with 2.5 gig copper interfaces and 1 10 gig SFP interface. And it does PoE out, so you put power in, it does power out, and you can toggle the power on each individual port, kind of like a Microtik power box or a 750UP kind of thing, but really capable of doing 10 gigs into it and 10 gigs out of it through 90-degree sectors that you might have on a tower or something along those lines. So from a distribution standpoint, you could really have high capacity with these sectors on a tower, get a 10 gig feed to it. So that's what I saw.
Was
that makes a lot of sense.
It was that the Trill enabled box, or is that a different one?
It did have Trill in it too. Like it was, he said it was going to be $300, I think, for this box, and it's got Trill in it too. So
yeah. That's interesting.
Going from tower to tower with
I
this
thought
stuff.
Trill was all but dead. I'm surprised there. Resurrecting that.
Trill is the direct replacement for RSTP, just without all the shit.
And well, I was listening to a Packet Pushers podcast where they were talking, I think, to the...
Well, they also
I think they went to an IETF group, and they were talking to one of the guys on the Trill thing, and he was talking about how it just died on the vine.
Maybe for certain applications.
When you know, Packet Pushers also says BGP's dead, so...
Right, I still see people using RIP occasionally, so... No, Cisco still tests on frame relay for some reason, so it never truly dies.
You know, it's probably been replaced in the data center by, you know, more advanced protocols, you know, all these different, you know, VXLANs and EVPNs and things, but, maybe it's coming to its time for, you know, WISP backhaul aggregation, where, you know, we're not moving VMs all over the, you know, thousands of VMs across these massive data centers and all that other complex stuff. You know, maybe it's, you know.
They're also revving the Metrolink hardware, and it's going to have SFP plus ports and 2.5 gig interfaces to your Ethernet, and it'll actually, they're going to up the rates that it can do, so you'll be able to get more than a gig and a half out of it or whatever.
Well, maybe the 2.5 gig, you said they're doing copper for that,
copper,
right?
Copper, 2.5 gig
All
copper.
Right. So
yeah.
That makes sense, because I think 10 gig implementations of copper, I think they don't...
It's still expensive.
I think it's hard to go distance. I don't think you can go very far with
no,
it.
No, it's the same distance. It's just expensive.
Is it?
Yeah. Still 100 meters.
I was thinking it was a little bit less.
I can only imagine that the, you know, the Cat 7A or Cat 7B cabling and all the connectors and, you know, stop deploying copper, just go to fiber.
I don't know, man. As soon as we've reached limitations on copper, they just come out with a new modulation technique or just a new way to reutilize
it. Sure, but it requires new copper.
Not always.
Well, but, going from, 100 meg was, Cat 5. You got to,
Speaking of cats.
Cat 5, yeah. Cat 5e or Cat 6 for 1 gig. And then, you got to have, a higher end Cat 6 or a Cat 7 for 10 gig. Each new... I see a drill press.
Yeah.
We have technical difficulties?
No, man. Nobody watches this. Everybody just listens. I don't know if you're talking. Nobody's going to know anything. Nobody's going to see that close up on my cat's butt.
No, but like single, just basic single mode fiber that was deployed 30 years ago is just as capable as fiber is today. You know, other than some distance stuff.
Yeah, I think some of that older single mode, you can't do as many channels of WDM on it and things like that. I don't think it's optimized for it.
But I think it was Infinera or one of those, one of Sprint's like 1,100 kilometer segments, you know, they still stuffed it full of 100 gig channels. I mean, it might not be as good, but, you know, if it was deployed 30 or 40 years ago, or you know, 30 years ago, and still deploys dozens or hundreds of 100 gig E, it still seems fairly relevant.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, what was it? Miller and I went to a broadband communities thing a while back. It was fiber to the home thing, and they're basically just telling you how you couldn't do anything with copper and just saying how it was worthless. You just need to rip it all out. And I don't know. It's pretty insane, you know, because this is like delivering service to people, and they're basically saying, if you've already got existing, you know, Cat 5e or Cat 6 in place, you need to get rid of that. Because you're not going to be able to deliver the services that people need today over it. I'm just thinking, dude, you could do a gig off of that. And most fiber to the home places top out at a gig. So how are you telling me that I need to rip and replace absolutely all of my infrastructure? It's just it's craziness.
What happens when the new hotness is the wireless delivery that all these ISPs are now following suit after the WISPs? You got the ATT doing the gigapower or whatever it is over the telephone poles. You got Verizon trying to do it. You got Google now trying to do it. They already bought up Webpass.
Google Fiber.
So what happens with that community, that group, when it swings from fiber to wireless, and when's copper going to have its day again?
When's copper going to have its day? Copper's had its... God. Bless this cat won't go away. I don't know. Copper, I guess, for one, it's easier for me to get jobbers to pull copper and not have to worry about them breaking it. It's less time to terminate, and it's fairly robust, right? If I have a break in the field, I can send any jobber out there to fix that stuff. Whereas if it's fiber, I got a couple of guys that are capable of repairing this stuff or installing it and things like that, and it's a little bit, you know, more delicate to install, and there's going to be people who are going to argue with me, and that's fine. I'm just trying to be realistic and use as uneducated labor as possible, you know, to keep my cost down. If I can have
there's a lot of uneducated labor in Texas.
Why do you think I'm talking so much? That way people don't realize how little I actually know. That's why it's a constant stream of bullshit coming at you. I absolutely do see the use for fiber, and I do use it a lot. It kind of irks me a little bit when people say copper's dead and then it's useless, and you know, you gotta get that crap out of here.
If the copper you have works, use it. If you have to replace the copper you have, don't put it copper back in. Put in fiber.
Go ahead and put in some fiber.
Unless you want to do PoE.
Yeah.
You don't have that power over optical yet?
Because on the last MDU that I spec'd out, I did, like, I actually went with Ethernet just to do PoE to the router, so that way in a power outage, I could keep all the clients online. It was a higher end property.
Well, not just that, but you can remotely power cycle their gear, right? So
yeah,
it helps a lot in troubleshooting. You don't have to try and explain to an 85-year-old grandma what this device looks like, where it is, how to reboot it.
You have to explain how it's powered though sometimes.
Just where's magic.
The power for this? I don't know. Yeah.
It's magic. Don't worry about it. Well, just tell them it's like your phone you had 50 years ago. It works the same way. It just plug this wire in and it works.
Yeah, there you go. You could tell them it's nuclear power.
It's got dial don't tone on it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. I don't know. I do really like the idea of fiber, like in MDU installs too. I'd really like to give that a go. I don't think anybody wants to let me just take a bunch of crap and, you know, give it to me and then let me test it out and play with it. Unless somebody listening to this definitely wants to give me. Because I've seen where there's like... I can't remember what it's called, but I think it's Clearfield. Maybe Corning has their own version. But anyway, it's fiber that's it's got kind of this weird jacket that's outdoor. It's these two little pieces, and then when you go indoor, it actually just peels off, and it's you know, I mean, it's the size of a human hair, and it's invisible.
It comes on a fish line, and you're supposed to roll it right down the crown molding all the way down the hallway with a little roller, and it sticks there.
And it's like invisible, and you'd never even know it was there. I don't know.
That was pretty common, wasn't it?
I think there's a lot of versions of it, because I've seen one where they have, it looks like a giant caulk gun that has a special adhesive that dries clear that you stick it in there, and then one that, actually rolls it with these little sticky things. And just, I mean, there's several versions of the same thing, but it looks really neat, you know, so you can kind of invisibly run this stuff down, and then it doesn't matter if it gets painted or whatever, as long as it doesn't get broken, it's going to be fine.
I'm just scraping the paint.
Yeah. I mean, copper doesn't usually break unless somebody paints over an Ethernet port or jams it into the wall. I've seen that too. And
puts a nail in it. That's people hanging picture frames and that's what happens usually.
We had somebody call us one time telling us it wasn't working, and they had taken the USB mail, the A side, and it slides right into an Ethernet jack, and they're like, couldn't figure out why it wasn't working for them. So, yeah, people are going to find a way to screw it up. But I don't know, man. I still like copper. You can PoE that stuff. You can remote reboot it. You can just, I don't know. It feels like it gives you a little bit more control. And I think as long as it can foreseeably serve your purpose, although, I don't know, right? Future-proof stuff, but I still think, for like end clients, like you're talking about in an MDU scenario or things like that, it still makes a lot of sense in my mind. I don't know. Man, we got way off subject on that. Anything else on the, because that all stemmed from the IgniteNet stuff. Did you guys see anything else at the conference you were interested in?
The only other big announcement that I remember is the Siklu point to multipoint stuff was hot there. And I guess Packet Flux had a new mid-span. That was pretty cool.
My favorite two interviews of the show were definitely Chuck McCown and Forrest of Packet Flux. Well, Chuck of McCown Technologies and then Forrest of Packet Flux.
Yeah, I liked how you called him old in that one. That was a nice touch, Mike.
I didn't call him old. He called himself old.
I don't know. It's not how I heard it.
But I think those two guys, they are way undervalued outside of Canopy operators. They have some pretty amazing products. Obviously, some of them, being sync products, have limited use outside of Cambium. But, on the AFMUG mailing list, which is... That mailing list is a mess. It talks about recipes for something 1 minute, and then, you know, Cambium 450 bugs the next minute, and then somebody's explaining electrical circuits and component types and variations of component types and why this component in this box is just all over the place. But, you know, they'll post tremendously long novels about all the theory and then translation of theory into practice for whichever product they're talking about and why they went with that decision and why something else sucks.
I think what everybody really wants to know is, did you get some of that Adir money while you were there?
I didn't get any of his money.
I didn't get a shirt or a hat or any of his money.
I was so nervous when I ordered that hat, the initial shipping date or the original delivery date was the Friday before the show. I'm like, if he's going a couple days early, he's not going to get the hat. But thankfully, Cafe Press pulled through and he actually got there a week before they said it was going to.
I think he said he's going to be at the MUM, so I'll finally actually get to meet this cat.
Yeah, he's going to be there.
I've emailed him a couple of times. He seems like a real, real nice guy, so looking forward to it.
Meanwhile, Tom was posting pictures of being out in the bar.
Yeah, just ignore that. All right. So anybody else have anything pressing they want to talk about, or you want to put a bow on this one?
Thomas is falling asleep here, so let's put a bow on it.
All right, let's put a bow on it. Thomas Kernack, you beautiful bastard. If people want to get a hold of you on the interwebs, how would they go about doing that?
Just Google for me. I'm pretty easy to find. You know, Facebook, LinkedIn. Check us out at unemus.net. Find me through there, forums. YouTube. I'm fairly easy to find.
YouTube. He's got some videos of him, bikini, the beach.
Too sexy. Too sexy for YouTube.
There you go. Miller, where are people not going to find you at on the internet?
Facebook and my blog, dynesthetic.net.
All right, sweet action. Oh. By the way, do you still have to use your CPAP machine now that you lost all that weight?
Nope.
You retired it.
60 pounds or so, I don't need it anymore.
That's killer, dude.
I also don't need my high blood pressure medicine anymore.
That's super cool, man.
I have low blood pressure. I get dizzy when I get up now. So.
Oh, you went the opposite direction.
It was 110 over 70 at the doctor's office.
You're way too young to be on medication, dude.
Yeah, I know.
That's good. No. That's good. All right, Hammy, if people want to get a hold of you out on the internet, how would they go about that?
Well, I've got somebody at the CIA and they'll just tell me when you're trying to find me.
Is that how that works?
That's how that
I'm
works.
I'm fairly certain they know. Let's see. So if you want to find Hammy, you probably want to, the easiest way is in reference to the Brothers Wisp is to jump on Facebook. It's Facebook/the Brothers Wisp. He is the keeper pretty much of all that stuff, all the new content, all of the back and forth, all of the really good discourse is coming on there from Mike. So be sure to throw questions, comments at him on there as well. We've had a couple of people share things, which is really great. Also, old school way of contacting us, contact us at thebrotherswisp.com. We got an email just the other day, and I forwarded that to the group, and it was quite a novel, and the guys kind of are slowly digesting it. Let's see. If you want to get a hold of me, you can find me through gregsoul.com. It's my blog. I say my blog. Can I still say that when I only put something up every month and a half? I guess it's still, I technically own it, so I guess it is my blog. I wouldn't expect a whole lot out of that. What else can you find me? You can find me at lynda.com. I do stuff there too. And unfortunately, I picked up a new course that I'm about to just murder myself over trying to get done in time, so that'll be a fun one. Let's see. I guess anybody out there, questions, comments, please fire away. I can't say a lot of this content because most of it just falls out of our heads, but a little bit of this is steered by you guys, so definitely want to hear what you're thinking about, what you want to see, if you want us to review something, if you have a vendor that we haven't talked about and you're curious to see about you know, how their products stack up, we'd love to talk to those guys too, so give us a shout. I guess if nothing else, thanks, and we'll see you next time, guys.
A couple of quick things. Couple of quick things.
What you got? What you got?
At the shows, I want to, you know, at the next Whisper show for sure, I want to do attendee interviews. So if you find me, ask me for an interview. Just want to talk about the show, stuff like that. Encourage your vendors to reach out to me in a timely fashion, so I'm not running around with an hour left of the show trying to get interviews. You know, encourage them to book me early. And also looking for, since people are complaining about audio quality in the videos, looking for vendors to sponsor us to buy better mics to hopefully shut people up.
Yeah, this conference, I mean, it's loud in those conference rooms, so short of like a nice shotgun or a lapel mic, I don't know that we're going to be able to get any better if somebody doesn't help us out there.
Well, yeah, you know, I started looking at better mics for this because I don't want to be mixing the audio separately later. So there's only so many things it can do.
But, for sure.
And I'd rather spend somebody else's money than my own. And
I hear you.
So vendor, give me your money so I can buy a better mic.
All right, cool. Well, thanks, guys. Send your vendors this way. Tell them to give us money so we can give better interviews with Mike and folks. Thanks, guys.